So we can start.
All right. Thank you, Halle. We'll go ahead and we'll call the meeting to order. We are right at the top of the hour. I know we got a couple folks still popping in. Go ahead and let's start with a roll call, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Michael Carbone. Nathan Young. I believe I've seen him. Okay. He's here. Jeff Paulson. Jagadishan Krishnamurthy.
So Jaggy's not able to hear us, is what he's saying.
Oh. Annalisa, would you be able to help him?
Yeah.
All right. Doug Lane.
Here.
Eddie Cook. Yeah, he's here. He just told us that he's in a busy place, so we know that he's here. Christine Ward.
Here.
Michael Carpenter.
Here.
David Byers.
Here.
Lev Gonick.
Here.
Ryan Murray.
I am here.
Thank you, everybody. Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum. We can start.
Okay, fantastic. All right, we just had Jaggy just rejoin. Jaggy, are you able to hear us now? Okay. There. Okay, well, we're here. We're getting feedback from you, so I guess you're hearing us. Okay, I will go ahead and welcome everyone to the, we'll call it December/holiday edition of ITAC. Though we're not handing out any presents today. I will ask the question of the staff. Do we have any conflict of interest forms that were submitted?
No, Mr. Chairman, we have not.
Okay. I will remind folks, if in the course of our meeting you do feel conflict is there, please raise your hand. We'll take care of the paperwork in due course of the meeting. We'll note that as part of the meeting minutes and our voting processes. We also want to remind folks that this is a public meeting. We do follow public meeting law, and we have a link in the agenda you see here for public comment submission. So with that, we will go ahead and step into our agenda for the day. We only have one voting item, a couple of informational updates that will not be voting. So we may get through things relatively quickly. We'll see how things go. There are some wagers on time, so we'll let you know if you want to participate. We'll try and get you in the pool on that. All right. First thing is handling our November 20th recording as the minutes of our previous meeting. If there's not any discussion on that item, we'll take a motion with regards to those meeting minutes.
So moved.
All right. Thank you, Christine. Do we have a second?
This is Jaggy. I'll second.
All right. Thanks, Jaggy. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right. Thank you. That was unanimous. All right. Moving into the next item, which is our consent agenda. Again, there's only one item in the consent agenda, but again, that will be handled in one motion with no review. So I will take a motion with regard to the consent agenda.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the consent agenda be approved as presented.
Thank you, Mr. Byers. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Christine. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Again, unanimous. Thank you. All right, we'll now get to our first item that will be presented, and that is The Department of Economic Security talking about the UI benefits modernization project with a change request.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Bob Mussey. I'm an engagement manager with the Department of Administration. I'm joined here today by members of the Department of Economic Security, who will introduce themselves shortly, followed by a brief overview of their project change request. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, on November 16, 2022, ITAC approved the project investment justification to procure the DES Division of Employment Rehabilitation Services UI Benefits Modernization Project. DES is requesting approval on a change request for timeline, extending the project approximately 8 months and increasing the budget by approximately $186,000. I will now turn it over to the project team to present additional information regarding the proposed change request and answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Bob. Mr. Chair, members, as Bob mentioned, this project was one that the department had come forward with just over a year ago to get approval to modernize the unemployment insurance benefits portion of the unemployment insurance program. Here with me today, I have Anna Hunter, who is our assistant director for the Division of Employment and Rehabilitation Services, and Christopher Goins, who is our senior IT project manager for the project. Next slide, please. A little bit of background on the project. The original PIDG was done back in 2022. This was procured as a software as a service platform. One of the industry leading vendors for the unemployment insurance and employment programs that are operated by DES and several other agencies across the US. Was selected, and that is Geographic Solutions. The project kicked off in March of 2023 and really got underway late into 2023 and into 2024. This is a modernization of a legacy mainframe application that is 35 plus years old and contains data almost back to the beginning of when that mainframe application came online. The solution does provide for disaster recovery capabilities, as well as being scalable for opportunity for further integration for the unemployment insurance, tax, and workforce lines of business. Next slide, please. The change request history, we did have one change request previously back in September of 2024, where we did reduce some of the cost associated with a Zendesk application. And we also added to the project an appeals module, and that appeals are for individuals who have an overpayment of employment benefits, or if they are denied benefits, they can appeal those decisions. Right now, the appeals functionality that we are utilizing is more of an in-house developed application, and certainly wanting to take advantage of the SaaS platform, we saw the advantage of moving towards that appeals module. Next slide. Current overall project health is red, mainly due to schedule. And some risks associated with some of the items that are still in development. You can see under the risk category, there are two items, work assignment methodology, which I'll talk a little bit more about as we go into the deck, and then also data conversion. I mentioned that data conversion was one of the big hurdles. Just as an example, during the Great Recession in 2009, the federal government opened up the capability to intercept federal tax returns for repayment of unemployment insurance overpayments. Previously, we had not been able to intercept those federal tax returns. When they did open that up in 2009, the first file that we submitted to the IRS to intercept those federal tax returns, the oldest unemployment insurance debt that we intercepted a federal tax return for at that time was from 1983. So as you can imagine, the application, the legacy mainframe application, has data upon data. And unfortunately, given the age and antiquated nature of the application, some of that data is fairly difficult to try to convert to a more modern platform. Data fields have changed and things along those lines over the years. So that has added to the complication of the project. We've also seen some delays in delivery of code to the department for testing that is playing into this. I think one of the bigger components that has also led to the change request that we're talking about today is related to requirements finalization. That took a little bit longer than we anticipated. Unfortunately, due to the complex nature of the program, you're dealing with both federal and state laws and regulations. So that does add a complexity level to the program, unfortunately. Next slide. The change request overview, we are extending from the current end date of April of this year to December of this year, with go live moving from January of 2025 to September of 2025. The budget, there is a minor increase of $186,000 to extend the timeline for the IVMV vendor, as well as some minor additional costs. As we talked a little bit about, the data conversion has proven to be extremely complex, and due to the size of the data set that we are converting, that has added time. The staff assigned work item, this is a fairly substantial change for the vendor. Right now, their solution is developed in such a manner that work is auto-assigned by the application. During the pandemic, the department, due to the workload that we were experiencing, we had to take a step back and reevaluate that work assignment process. And what we found was substantially more efficient was to create a work item list and have the staff in the unemployment program be able to go to that list and pull work in. We found that to be much more efficient than having it auto-assigned. And that has been a fairly major change for the vendor to their SaaS solution. There's also a considerable amount. I mentioned the differences and the complexities around the federal and state regulations and laws. Adding to that complexity is that the federal government, the Department of Labor, is broken into several regions across the U.S. Unfortunately, the guidance that comes out from those regional offices is not always consistent on a nationwide basis. And so we have found some difficulty in the solution as developed did not meet the requirements of that regional guidance that we have been provided. And so that has caused a little bit of rework for the vendor. The vendor is also pursuing state ramp authorization, which is going well. And I commend the folks at the Department of Homeland Security for working with DES and the vendor to get that accomplished. Next slide. Revised project timeline, as I mentioned, the go live date, which I think is the big one. You'll see the second to the last line, moving that go live from January out to September 14th. We looked at what was a realistic timeline, as well as when was the best time to make that go live transition for the program. We have quarterly federal reporting requirements, and there's also quarterly change in wage reports. And so we did not want to go in the middle of a quarter. We wanted to go just after the end of a quarter or right near the end of a quarter so that we minimize the impact to the program and the staff time that would be taken up as part of that go live. So that is the revised schedule that you can see there. Design and development, you can see, was originally slated to be over in March of this year. We're extending that to the first part of March of 2025. Again, that relates to the complexity of the program, requirements gathering. I think one of the things that we have as a major lesson learned for each of the mainframe applications that we have looked at modernizing is that requirements piece, and we are changing how we go about that requirements process going forward. One of the things that we will be having the vendors do is, rather than just taking the department's developed requirements document, we'll also be putting in place a process by which those vendors will come in. We will open up the legacy application to them and allow them to see a front-to-back operation of that application so that they can then identify gaps that may exist between what the department is currently doing with its application versus what our requirements are outlining, and help us identify where there may have been gaps. We will also be bringing in outside assistance on those requirement gathering efforts going forward. So we are applying lessons learned as we go through this project and applying those to future projects. Next slide. Again, this just details out the current project timeline in a little bit of a bar graph for you to show when the go live was scheduled and when the completion was supposed to take place. The next slide will show us the revised proposed timeline and that go live date going into September of this year. Final payment of invoices would occur by the end of 2025. Next slide. Original PIDGE project costs were just over $23.2 million. We talked a little bit at the outset about the slight increase in cost associated with continuing the IVMV for the project and some other minor cost adjustments, just over $180,000. So next slide. This shows you the amended cost, again, taking into account that prior change request where we did identify some licensing costs that were no longer needed and working in the revised cost for the IVMV. Next slide. IVMV recommendations and assessment. I think this aligns fairly closely with what we've discussed previously. The work assignment, the self-assignment functionality, is a major component for the department, and they had suggested incrementally implementing that. That really is not a feasible option at the time for the department. So we did put that as a requirement for go live, which has extended the date for development work, and also looking at the rigorous the process by which the vendor is going through and looking at the quality of what is being turned over to the agency and looking at the timeline for those sprints and making sure that good documentation exists for the department to complete its testing. So we are doing a regular cadence of meetings that are at this point daily meetings with the vendor because we are getting very close to the final turnover of coding for full departmental testing. So we have a cadence of daily meetings that we have. We also have weekly executive level meetings with the DES team and the vendor team. Next slide. And with that, Mr. Chair, members, I will open it up to any questions that you have.
Let's go ahead, Mr. Byers.
Hey, Mark, conversion is always a big struggle. Why are you going back and converting data that's 35 years old? Is there some requirement to do so?
There is, Mr. Chair, Mr. Byers. One of the things that the federal government will not allow us to do is write off bad debt. So any unemployment insurance overpayment that is still outstanding And I use the example of the debt that we collected in 2009 that was from 1983. We have to convert that data and keep that live in the system so that as we have the ability to go in and collect tax offsets, that type of thing, we have that data readily available and can use the overpayment structure to be able to collect that debt.
Yeah, I thought that might be the case. But are you able to identify cases with overages? So that's got to be a subset of the total, or do you, are you not able to?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Byers, yes, we are able to identify those cases where there is an overpayment. Any cases where there where the case is closed and it is beyond the records retention requirements at either the state or the federal level, those are not being converted. It's only those cases where there is an outstanding overpayment that exceed those record retention requirements that we end up converting.
Got it. Thanks.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Any other questions from the members? All right. I'll turn it back over to you, Bob.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. ACID is recommending that the change request be approved with the original conditions as presented. I would like to inform the committee that conditions, as Mark stated earlier, conditions 3 and 4 are in progress, moving forward with the Department of Homeland Security, and condition 5 was satisfied at the beginning of this project.
All right, thanks. Any discussion on the conditions? If not, I will take a motion with regard to this change request.
So moved. It's Lev.
Thank you, Lev. Do we have a second?
This is Ryan. I'll second.
Thank you, Ryan. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right. Thank you. That's unanimous vote. Mark, continue on. It's not like you're getting close. So good luck with the finishing out.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
All right. And on to our next two items. We'll be familiar faces. DES is back up. Back to you, Bob.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Once again, my name is Bob Mussey. I'm an engagement manager of the Department of Administration. Also, again, I have members of the Arizona Department of Economic Security. The team will provide the committee with an informational update to the overall status of the Division of Technology Services Zero Trust Access Model Project, page number DE24007. I'll now turn it back over to you, Mark.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members. The project team, as identified, myself, our CISO, Dan Wilkins, our Chief of Operations, Clay Sykes, Stephen Ayers, and Debbie Foley. Next slide, please. This project was originally started back in September of 2023 as part of the fiscal 2024 budget. The department had requested and received an appropriation for several security-related enhancements that we wanted to move forward with. One of those was related to Zero Trust. We were authorized that funding in fiscal year 2024 and had proceeded with the project after receiving approval from the committee for the PIDG back in September. This was to move forward and enhance the department's security posture related to network architecture segmentation and also looking at ensuring that we had a layer of protection, an additional layer of protection around zero-day threats and advanced persistent threats. So with that, we had proceeded with implementation of a vendor solution. And next slide, please. Unfortunately, after going through that project and being about a week away from being able to fully implement the fiscal 2025 budget, was passed, and unfortunately the ongoing funding to support the licensing cost for the vendor solution were not included as part of the department's base budget. And due to that and the overall agency reductions that were implemented as part of the fiscal 2025 budget due to revenue declines at the state level, the department has not been able to identify funding to be able to pay those ongoing licensing costs. It is close to $500,000 to proceed with the licensing associated with the project. So we have had to discontinue the project and close it out, unfortunately. So we did want to come before the committee and let you know the final outcome. Again, we had fully done all of the work associated with the project. We were ready to go live with the implementation of the vendor solution. But because of that ongoing licensing cost, we were not able to proceed with full deployment. Next slide. You can see the financial burn down. We did go through and spend the vast majority of the budget for the project and had been prepared to go live and have not been able to due to that ongoing funding requirement that we're just not able to identify funding to continue. Next slide. And with that, Mr. Chair, members, I will open it up for any questions that you may have.
Okay, committee members, any questions?
Army of Islev, thank you for the update. I'm sure folks are disappointed that you got this close without being able to bring it over the goal line. Can you just briefly outline what is currently available should funding materialize in terms of resuscitating the program once and if and when resources are found for purposes of getting the licensing?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Gonick, yes, absolutely. One of the things that we ensured we did before we terminated the licensing with the vendor, we have gone through and completed a full run book for everything that was done on the project and what would be needed in the event that funding were provided or available to be able to immediately restart that. So I don't view it as a complete lost effort because we have ensured that we've gone through and done all of the documentation of what we did to get to that go live and made sure that in the event that funding were to become available, it would be a very short turnaround time to proceed and fire things back up. So we did ensure that. I didn't want it to be a complete lost effort. So we did make sure that we got everything documented and would be prepared to go at a very short notice should funding become available.
Mark, I noticed on the previous slide that there was a reference to a zero trust maturity assessment. Did you get the deliverable on that for the organization to understand kind of current state and you know, at least have that as a readout of the engagement?
Mr. Chair, yes, I believe we did. I will re-verify that with Mr. Wilkin, but I believe we did get the assessment completed and are happy to share a copy of that.
All right. Any other questions from the committee? Okay. Well, there we go, Ryan.
Sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just real quick, Mark, how much of this was new technology that was being implemented versus configuration or additional items that could be done to existing technology?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Murray, the bulk of it was new technology that we were bringing into the stack. There is a bit of configuration, and I know Mr. Wilkins and the security risk and compliance team at DES have taken anything that we possibly could that was an enhancement in the existing stack, and we have implemented those that came out of the project. but the majority of it was adding an additional application into the stack.
Understood. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? If not, we will go back to you, Bob, for the next intro.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the final time today, my name is Bob Mussey. I'm the engagement manager of the Department of Administration. Also, for the final time, I have members of the Arizona Department of Security, Department of Economic Security, who will provide the committee with an informational update to the overall status of the DTS Privilege Access Management Project, page number DE240010. I'll turn it back over to Mark for this informational update.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, unfortunately, members, we are coming to you today to give the informational update that we are not going to be able to continue due to the budgetary issues that I mentioned on the Zero Trust. We face those same issues on the Privileged Access Management Project. On the project, we had our enterprise technology support senior manager, Terry Allen. Again, our CISO, Dan Wilkins, and Debbie Foley, as well as Clay Sykes. Next slide, please. This project, the department has approximately 1,500 individuals out of our 8,500 plus staff that have elevated access privileges. That can be anything from a local administrator on their device, all the way up to our server managers and application development staff. We didn't have previously a real industry standard tracking application to be able to manage those privileged accounts. A lot of it was being done manually in spreadsheets and database work, which is not very efficient and does not allow the check-in, check-out capability that we were moving towards with this project. So with that, we have had several findings over the years in various audits related to the privileged access management process within the agency. So again, this was something that was requested by the department, was funded as part of our fiscal 24 budget. Unfortunately, the ongoing licensing cost were not included in the fiscal 2025 budget, and due to those funding constraints, we're just not able to absorb those licensing costs. Again, it is close to $500,000 a year to have that licensing and the ongoing support. A couple of the big benefits to moving forward with this project were that we were going to have, for really the first time in department history, the ability to manage this from a, if an individual needed elevated account privileges, they would go through a check-in and a check-out process. So they wouldn't just be given an elevated account as their normal login, if you will. It would have been the user needs elevated privileges. They would have to document the reason their account would be elevated for a set period of time to complete that work, and then their account would drop back down to essentially a regular user. That was going to be a very big step forward for the agency. We would also have a much better online tracking capability for those accounts that have those access privileges. And we would also be able to manage workstation and server elevated access as part of the project. Next step, next slide. Project status again, we were about 2 weeks away from deploying the application when the 2025 budget came out, looking at what the department funding structure was going to be and identifying that it was just not feasible to continue that licensing due to budgetary constraints. We will have some impacts, but we also have, as we did with the Zero Trust project, we documented everything along the way on the project and before we closed out with the vendor. We did full documentation and runbook for how the application was going to be deployed. The accounts that we had identified as not needing to be part of privileged access, and also looking at, in the event that funding did become available, how quickly would we be able to leverage what we had already done and re-engage with the vendor. So all of that has been documented and is stored centrally with our division. So in the event that funding did become available, we could get this back on track very quickly. We do run a risk with audits going forward, but we are taking steps to mitigate that. As part of the process that we went through on the project, identifying those elevated account privileged members, we have gone through a full justification process. We have changed the process for the local administrator. Those are now going through a ticketing process rather than the individual just having a local administrator account if they only needed it for certain activities or for brief periods of time. We have implemented a ticketing process for at least those accounts and reduced the risk as much as we could without having the full privileged access management application. Next slide. The financial burn down, as you can see, we had pretty much completed the budget and the development. We had a few remaining pieces, but by and large, everything had been completed on the project and we were ready for go live in about 2 weeks before we had to cancel, unfortunately. Next slide. With that, Mr. Chair members, I'll open it up for any questions that folks may have.
Thank you, Mark. Members, any questions on the information that Mark has shared here?
I just have one question, and it can relate to either of these projects. So obviously, the budgeting process is extensive. The governance process is extensive. When you take a look at both of these initiatives, what was the logic that was given in terms of why we were going to drive towards sunk cost and not moving forward with the feature functionality capabilities that these were going to provide?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Lang, I want to make sure I understand the question. Is the question, why did we continue to move forward?
No, the question is more so in terms of what you can share, why was it deemed that these were not necessary to move forward?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Lang, thank you. It wasn't a case of it was deemed not necessary to move forward. It is strictly there was no funding available to pay the ongoing licensing cost for either of the projects. So when we submitted the request for funding as part of the fiscal 24 budget, we had outlined the one-time cost and then the ongoing licensing cost. Those ongoing licensing costs, unfortunately, were not added to the agency-based budget. And therefore, we just did not have the funding available to pay those ongoing licensing fees.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions from the committee? If not, thank you, Mark. Appreciate the transparency and providing the updates. As Lev shared, I understand probably the disappointment that your team has in investing this much in both of these projects and having to cut them short.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. Hopefully, I kept somebody in the pool for the short meeting time.
All right. The rest of our informational updates are written, so we will not be hearing on those. And that concludes the content of our agenda for the day. Our next meeting will be January 15th. Between now and then, wish all of you a very happy holiday season and a great new year. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.